In business, time is everything, and so is the freedom to be able to move your money. You want to avoid what's known as banking friction. Sometimes those moments you're ready to go on a big project, but you're stuck waiting on a wire transfer or might even have to drive physically to a bank to sign out a single form. That's exactly what Banking on Mercury is designed to eliminate. Mercury offers a powerful banking experience that feels like the best-in-class software we use for everything else in our lives. It's free to get started with no in-person visits and no minimum balances, giving you immediate access to free same-day ACH USD wires and the ability to issue team cards with customizable permissions because Mercury is an all-in-one home for your finances. You can scan bills to pay them instantly, set up automated transfers to keep your accounts in a target range, and see exactly where your business stands from one smart dashboard without ever having to dig for data. It's flexible enough to grow with you, whether you're just starting out with a small business or managing a massive scaling team. Visit Mercury.com to learn more and apply online in minutes. Mercury is a fintech company, not an FDIC-insured bank. Banking services provided through Choice Financial Group and Column NA, members FDIC.
Summer break is here. I want my kids to have fun, but I also want them to keep their skills sharp. Between vacations and sports, I need something that fits our busy schedule without adding stress. That's why we use IXL. IXL is an award-winning online platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's proven to improve grades, and one subscription covers every child in the home, saving us time and money. It's trusted nationwide. And in fact, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now, and listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Okay, folks, here we go. Summer Shoot Around 2026 series is here. Series starts today with this episode. Over the next 6 weeks, we're going to have 18 episodes with a variety of different schools. Three of those episodes will be auction winners. We'll learn those, and I will learn them in real time as usual because I don't like to know what they are going in. That'll be for the beginning of September. If you want to know everything about what schools are already on the docket, just go to the podcast feed. Go to the one right before this episode. There's like a 3-minute PSA. I give you the full rundown there. Learn right then and there if your school is already involved. For those listening, you clicked on the YouTube tab. You went into the feed. You already know what this one is because it's our first shoot around episode of 26, and we are going to start it with a banger. Longtime listeners know we rarely bring on coaches, but in the summertime, we like to mix it up, freshen up the voices. GP and I both have vacations, so this is also means of a way of some of us get a few shows off here and there. But man, oh man, I'm excited here because not only are we going to talk UConn, we are going to talk the Huskies with their coach, Dan Hurley. Josh, bring him on in. Dan Hurley is joining the Ion College Basketball Podcast. First of all, I didn't realize this before we went live. If you can see my headspace versus Hurley's, like, look how much the headspace is above you right now. It looks like I'm 7 feet tall and you're 3 feet. You're doing your best GP impression right now, Dan.
Well, I also, too, it's like when I'm in staff meetings, I keep my chair extra high and I like to have my staff lower. So okay. This is awkward.
That's a power move. You know, Letterman famously did that.
Well, I think you see, you know, you see players do it. Phil Jackson, I mean, his seat. Now, I think it was because he had back.
Yeah.
I think he had back problems because his seat was always higher.
Yeah.
Once he was tall.
Okay. How's your back doing? You all right?
I'm good. Physically, I'm feeling pretty good. 53. I feel like I'm in my prime.
I love to hear that. What are you doing at this point of the year? You know, live evaluation period is behind you. You know, there's still plenty of time to before, you know, I don't know if you've got a foreign tour, if you've got a personal vacation plan, but like this week specifically, what are you doing as coach of the Huskies?
All right. So we're in week five of the 8 weeks with the team. So we're halfway through that. You know, with the 27 I'm looking at the banners to try to figure out what year next year. Yeah, yep. So the 27 version of the Huskies. So we're, you know, we're midway through week five and got through with all of the, you know, the opportunity from May through the summer, you know, to see this current recruiting class and, you know, just to be able to make those full evaluations on the players now that we're going to really, you know, really go on and you know, set visits with and try to get them on campus and go see them. And so we're got to finish strong here. We got about another 3 weeks. We got to get visits planned. And then the staff and the players will get about a 2 week break before September hits and it's showtime.
Are you looking like at this time of the year, though, you say it's week five. Are you seeing like conditioning levels, how well they're adapting to your offensive and defensive schemes, workout regimens? Like what are the kind of the benchmarks you and your staff are looking at as you know, the roster kind of gels together?
Yeah, just, you know, obviously trying to avoid regression, just continue to make progress. I think the biggest thing for the newcomers that, you know, that enter our program is, you know, there's the intensity of the workload, the intensity of the practice sessions, you know, just the standards and what our expectations are for the summer. We don't do casual summers here in stores. You know, we're really trying to, you know, to put our team together and really put together an offensive philosophy, a defensive philosophy, help these guys get better with their skills. And then the fact that there's no one on campus really allows the team to gel. I mean, we're literally here, you know, by ourselves in stores. So it really gives the team a chance to really come together, spend a lot of time together, and, you know, do a lot of that team building, team bonding.
Dig it. We saw each other out in Vegas, and then we were in the middle of a conversation. Then one thing, it always happens on the recruiting trail, but I figured a podcast was a good, good way to reconnect after we got to chat for a little bit there. What were your impressions of the live evaluation period returning to Vegas? I wrote a story about it last week and everything I liked about it. But from a coach's perspective, I assume you're a fan, but if not, why not?
I liked it. I thought it was you know, a chance for us to be able to see our guys that were playing in the summer league. We couldn't, you know, get to see all of them. I didn't get a chance to see Taris, didn't get a chance to see Liam McNeely, but I was at least able to get over there a little bit. You know, it's not been good in the past because we're usually in Augusta and everyone's in Augusta for 2 weeks, which is, it's way too long to be there for anyone, I think. But, you know, I think the ability to be able to see some EYBL games and then jump over there, see guys in the summer league was really, really a cool thing. What I've got, you know, other issues with some other things that we end up recruiting and
let's hear them.
You know, the probably those June weekends, we could probably do without one of those. Yep. You know, I think the NBA camp probably becomes a little bit repetitive. I just think that one EYBL weekend in slash Adidas slash Under Armour weekend in May is a really good one. I think one high school weekend is a good one. And then, you know, I think Peach Jam is always great, along with the Adidas championships and obviously the Puma Under Armour. But, if, you know, I think if we could do away one of those high school weekends and then maybe, you know, I love the thought of the NBA camp. You know, maybe you could do that just without the coaches there. You know, I think that's a great experience for them. It's just, they could do without us sitting there just mobbing the stands.
Yeah, fair enough. You're probably entirely unaware, but I've got this soundboard over here, completely unrelated, hard left swerve here. You're the most populated coach on this board here. So I've got this one.
Squirrels. But a squirrel. I think that's a squirrel.
It's a classic, of course. Let's listen to a couple. What about this one?
Two rings, Baldy.
Love that one. Come on, that's a classic right there. I like this one around football season.
So now we'll start talking about Bears.
Let's talk about the Bears. Go Bears, baby. It's really you and Coach K that occupy the majority of this board here. But yeah, this is constantly.
I think that's a squirrel.
I think that's a squirrel. That's a constant go-to there. Yeah, I just at the mic, man. You're a maestro. Just unfiltered. I absolutely love it. How often do you know what you're going to say at a press conference before you say it?
Rarely.
Okay. Rarely. How's that working out for you?
Not always great. You know, not always great. I think, you know what? It's funny. I think my, you know, the one that I've gotten the most satisfaction out of is the Better Get Us Now.
Yes, yes, yes.
That one, I actually, on the way walking down the hallway to that press conference, you know, after losing to Nova there year two, on the way down there, I was saying, should I say this? Should I not say this? Should I say this? Are we really closer? Are we actually going to get there? I mean, I was kind of contemplating because, like, yeah, once I said that, you know, you're putting yourself out there pretty good. But when the squirrel's bare, I mean, a lot of it, that stuff, it's just, you know, it comes into your brain. I don't have great impulse control.
Yeah.
And a lot, and I think you would agree that a lot of what I'm doing is happening unplanned.
Yeah. I think there's nothing wrong with that. And keep it up, and we'll see what you can say over the next few months to add another drop to the to the board there. Let's dive into the roster. Braylon Mullins is back. He's you know, the most notable returnee from a broad fan standpoint because of what he did in the tournament. And in fact, actually, that moment, that game, before we get into why he actually came back, is that game like the most satisfying non-championship related game you've? I would guess yes, but I don't know. For all you're about to tell me, when you were coaching in high school in Jersey, you had something that was even wilder. But how's that kind of settled with you? You know, 4 months later here, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, just with what was at stake, and then I think just how that kind of how the game was transpiring. You know, outside of the Final Fours and the championship games, just, you know, how hard we had to fight in the game. I mean, just how great Duke is, how much respect you have, you know, for that opponent, having to, you know, beat a program like that to get to a Final Four. You know, it's a game, obviously you're struggling to shoot the ball. Some of it, you know, is your own ineptitude, and but a lot of it was, you know, just, you know, how excellent Duke was as a defensive team, and just how long you had to stay in the fight, and, you know, players, staff, program, like everyone involved, keeping their energy up, keeping that belief, keeping that hope alive that you're going to find a way, you know, to eventually, you know, put some game pressure on them and beat them late, you know, to go to the Final Four. I mean, the level of gratification on that one was through the roof. Just because we it was a character win. You know, it was truly like a culture win, a character win. You know, a toughness win. You know, for our program, and not just because we got to the Final Four. You know, a lot of it has to do with, the respect, the greatness of Duke as a program, that, you know, you did it, and that was the opponent. I think any other opponent, it might not be up there, you know, at that level in terms of the victory.
What did you keep from the game other than, you know, the hardware that comes with it, if anything?
I got a cool basketball that that was in our locker room that I got kind of painted with, like, mm-hmm. UConn colors, with like some of the historical, you know, the White House, the monument, all different landmarks in D.C. I have the ball.
You have the ball. Braylon doesn't have the ball?
Braylon does not have the ball.
Shouldn't he have the ball?
Well, I mean, it was part of the NIL. This year, we gave him a little bit extra so that we could have the ball. Okay, but what we're building here is you obviously got the Tate George shot.
Yes,
you know, from that's a historic, iconic moment. But then you got like the Kemba wall here, step back, and then now you've got that shop wall in the practice facility where we're actually having the ball built into the wall.
No way.
Yeah. Good idea. Right. But yeah, he was compensated for us keeping the ball, you know.
Wow. Okay. Good deal.
Got a nice candle.
A nice candle.
Yeah. There was a candle that, I'm a candle collector. I feel like, aromatherapy, essential oils, scents. Mm-hmm. They have either a calming effect on me or an energizing effect on me. So my wife, she got me a nice candle at a local boutique there that I utilized while we were staying at the hotel there. So that's also part of like this whole collection of East Region trophy, net, painted basketball.
Okay. I got to see that. Ray Allen shot in the Big East tournament, also big. And Talik Brown in the Big East tournament. Like the program in general has a variety of all time. I mean, the Talik Brown one is probably one of the more underrated ones after the fact, just a deep, deep, you know, three from 6 o'clock that helped clinch a big win there. But that's pretty killer. When will this mural, whatever it is, when will it be done?
Well, it was done already, but I didn't like it. So it was, Hold on.
They did this. Yeah. Did you see it as it was getting developed, or was it like?
Yeah, but I didn't. Okay. I didn't like the way it looked, because you know, like I think it was too focused on the shot, and it was kind of it blurred out the reaction. The cool thing about the Kemba wall is like you've got like you know maybe one of our biggest donors under the basket, like a little kid watching Kemba shot. You've got all these kind of New York basketball characters like on that wall that were at that game at MSG. So there wasn't enough of a focus on the people behind the basket looking at the shot go up as it's going through the basket, the facial expressions, the anticipation. So, we got the best of both worlds, but it had to be redone.
I just love the idea of it getting done and you coming in and saying,
rip it down, do it over.
Not up to the Hurley standard. The reactions of everyone in the crowd there too. Incredible. That's one of my all time regrets of not being at the game, because I would almost always go to the East Regional being, you know, on the East Coast, but they had asked me, hey, do you want to go out and cover the West Regional? And I had never been to San Jose. And I was like, sure, absolutely. I'll do it. Like, and it was great. It was a good time. But if you had told me it was going to be those four teams with that kind of ending, I would have gone. But alas, I was on the opposite coast as this, all that was. I know I was actually in studio. I had flown back overnight and then I did studio for HQ and that whole thing went viral.
That was like the Duke St. John's game.
I know. They were all good.
Yeah. Michigan State game was a tight game with late game shot making. And then you get that to cap it off. It lived up to the hype. Things don't always live up to the hype. That lived up to it.
What went into Mullins coming back? We talked about a little bit about this casually in Vegas, but for the purposes of the show here, how optimistic were you 48 hours from your season ending in the title game versus where you ultimately landed a couple of weeks later?
Well, I think, you know, number one, I think you get a sense when you're coaching these kids and the families and the players, you know, and the agents now that, that they've made a decision, or you know they were coming strictly for a one and done, no matter you know how the player felt about their level of comfortability with taking that step. And I think the thing with Braylon and their family was that you know they kind of came into the program knowing that he was a player that the NBA valued at a very high level, but I don't think they came into UConn with this idea that this is just definitely a one and done, no matter what the situation is, no matter what his draft stock is. You know, which by the way, he would have gone top 15 once he went and did the workouts for teams. He would have absolutely caught the late lottery without question. So, I think it came down to, you know, is the player exactly where he wants to be? You know, mentally, physically, emotionally, the player, a great agent and agency recognizing that Another year of development in college is going to put this player, in a position to not only, be drafted higher. He's not losing much or anything financially. And when he gets to the NBA, in a similar way to a Steph Castle and a Donovan Klingon, he's going to be a guy that's going to be ready to play for that NBA team. He's going to be able to, be comfortable in an NBA locker room around grown-ass men. He's going to just be physically and mentally and skill-wise and confidence-wise and, just handling everything that it means to be an NBA player. He's going to be just better prepared for it. And that's kind of the beauty of NIL now. But I would say when it was, the whole year, I never felt like, it was a situation where their hearts were set on him being a one and done. I think it's just, all reasonable people that wanted to make the best decision for Braylon and what was best for his entire career, like the next 16, 17, 18 years that he's going to play basketball, not just draft night coming up.
Yeah, no doubt. And he, and by the way, and by virtue of coming back, we have a true, nationally known player. He'll be one of a handful in the sport who, not just that he hit the shot, but that he plays for you, UConn, just everything that goes into it. It's obviously a huge net positive for men's college basketball. He comes back alongside a critical head of the snake in Silas Demery Jr. Jaden Ross is back. Jacob Ross, who redshirted last season, they're back. And then you have what I believe is your biggest portal class ever, I think. Nick Kamenia from Duke and Najee Hines are the two particularly notable ones. Hines, a big man from Seton Hall, and then Kamenia, who can play the wing and be a guy who can play multiple positions. And then you've got transfers inbound from Wofford, Northern Arizona, Jacksonville State, Oscar Gilte from Stanford. I think you've got high hopes for him. And then another role player from Arkansas that comes in. Did you do anything different portal wise? And I know you got a freshman class as well, but like in terms of the portal class, Dan, did you basically approach it the same way you had the past couple of years, or because this was a bigger group, did you need to tweak the process at all, so to speak, bringing in so many guys to a team that just made the title game?
Yeah. So we basically, whether did you say template or template?
Template. Are you a template guy?
Oh,
I'm template. I'm data, not data.
Okay. All right. I'm template.
Yeah, template. We're saying it the same.
Yeah, all right. So, yeah, I think we've we've had a level of success, and I think we have a way that we like to play. We have the type of player that we like to recruit in terms of the character, in terms of the makeup. That's going to fit our culture. And then we've got a player with a specific skill set that we like, positionally. So I think, you lose a guy like an Alex Caravan and, you're going in the portal and you're really hoping to find some traits, some attributes that are similar. So that leads you to a Nick Kamenia, who is not the same player, but, is similar body type, really smart player, really skilled player, really versatile player. But he's got a similar archetype to an Alex Caravan. So, yeah, you end up zeroing in on that type of 4-3-3-4 that fits a lot of what you like to do, especially at the offensive end of the court. When you know you've got this void at center, you lose Taris to the NBA and you lose Eric Reiber to the portal, you're looking for what do we do at center? Well, we like to have an ass-kicking, big physical, deep post-up, big-time screening, rolling, rim-protecting, rebounding, physically dominant center like a Sanogo, like a Taris Reed, which leads us to Najee Hines. And then I think what we've been able to do at that position is have a backup that has a different type of skill set to complement, that big physical center. So, we liked Uskar. It's not Oscar. All right.
It's Uskar.
So if you want to pronounce that properly, for him and his nation, it's more of an Uskar for him. And he's a movement center. a guy that's going to blitz ball screens and get passing lanes and roll and sprint and complement, the bigger, more physical guys. So, what we're trying to do, and with some of the veterans that we added, whether it's Isaiah Shaw or Jay Nash, part of why we've been so successful is our locker room. So losing a guy like Alec Melander last year, who's a great locker room guy and a great veteran, that was a great team guy. It's just a great influence in that room. We really tried to repeat that by bringing in some of these older guys, because we're not the type of program that's looking for 23, 24-year-olds, overseas, bringing in a guy that's played pro for 7 years. And, we're trying to do this more, in more of a developmental way. If you notice a lot of our roster, it's like, we're trying to do this with sophomores, freshmen, homegrown boys.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting as hell to see how this group with all these portal players, three freshmen coming in, adapt to your culture. And, you're going to be a preseason top five team, Dan, particularly because you get Mullins back, and Demery is going to be just about as valuable as any point guard in the country. And you got to figure Jaden Ross makes a big jump there. Okay. So the PC answer would be, of course, I'm going to ask where you're at right now, but you're not a PC kind of guy. Like right now, gauge it against last year's team, let alone the title teams. Like, I know we're so far out from the season starting, but are you relatively optimistic? Did I catch you on a good day? Where do you stand with this group on the whole?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have the greatest practice yesterday, but it was, okay. We were off 2 weeks, and it was starting another 4 weeks. So there was a little bit of ring rust. But I mean, when you start with potentially what you think may be the best backcourt in college next year, I think that's, in the sport of basketball, it's always a great place to start. I think Silas, Silas at the point where he took that high ankle sprain in the tournament, he was maybe our best player, our most indispensable player. He was a shell of himself in the NCAA tournament. We're just happy he was able to give us some minutes. So, but Silas would have been a guy that if he had played in March at full capacity, he would have been in the draft process. He would have been in the combine. He would have played it out all the way to the end. And I think he would have been back without question, because he would have had a second round grade. But, I think people forget just how great Silas was playing for us. He was our most efficient player, going into a point when he was injured. So, and I think Braylon has, the ability to be, I think both those guys have All-American level talent. Both guys will be vying for Big East Player of the Year. So that's always a great place to start. And obviously you mentioned a guy like Jaden Ross, who's a guy that's been in the program and played great for us last year down the stretch. And then, we're counting on some sophomores and some freshmen, and a guy like Niels, from Wofford to come in here and to give us that, that impact shooting, that versatility at the guard spot, and Colbin Landrieu and Junior County and Oscar to give us great, to give us great.
You said it was Uskar. Now it's Oscar.
I mean, I can't always get it right.
You just let me know.
I'm talking so fast.
I feel like it's Oscar, but you let me know.
But this group, I think the group is really, it's really talented. I think it's, I think it fits better. I think that last year's roster, it didn't fit great. I think this roster, I think it's good. It really fits. I think the players really fit the way we're going to play. And I do think when you have a chance to have the best backcourt in the country, I think that's obviously a great place to start.
Will you be a slow tempo team again? Your teams over the past six seasons, five of the six have been 300 or slower in adjusted tempo per game per KenPom. The 22-23 team was 204 overall. Obviously the method works for you. I've got to figure you're going to run most of the same offense. I know you lost Luke to Boston College, but you're a team that moves the ball well. Mm-hmm. Everyone always has a purpose. The ball is constantly in motion, and you run a lot of very intricate sets, but you are not a team that is absolutely run and gun, looking to get 77 possessions a game. With this group, should we expect a lot of the same kind of similar philosophical outlook on offense as we have over the past 5-6 years, Dan?
No, I think that's something, you know, from us in terms of getting better. I think for us, it's a desperate, urgent pursuit, you know, to be better. And I think that's a place where, you know, off stops, off turnovers, off long rebounds, you know, to mix in with our ability to make people, guard us, in a very unique way with the way that we play offense, with the amount of, you know, off the ball, on ball, off ball, post-ups, ball screen, running things to get guys threes, creating opportunities for isolations. I think the diversity of ways that we attack people in the half court, and the way that we go at people and stress out their defense in ways that they don't really have to guard a lot of people throughout the year. Whereas a lot of people are so ball screen heavy, when they see us, it's different. We do need to balance that out with a quicker strike, transition offensive attack on misses, turnovers, block shots, long rebounds, and then on our makes, we're going to want to put people in the torture chamber and have them really have to work, because people having to guard us in the half court with the things that we do, it has a debilitating effect on another team, on their legs down the stretch of a game, on their offensive attack. It's like body blows. Our identity is who we are in the half court when it's time to execute, but we do want to get easier baskets and blend that with, the way that we could really wear on people in the half court.
To the point that Dan just brought up at the Final Four this past season, I saw something that I don't think I'd ever seen, and that was the head coach went out to scout. Typically, at the tournament and the Final Four, when you're going to play one of the teams, one or two of the assistants will go out and they'll scout in advance. And usually, assistants will either, one will take both offenses, or one will take one team, or one will take the other. Well, Dusty May went out and actually watched you guys. And at halftime, he said, one, I just want to see ball up close because I never get to watch a game like this. But two, I want to see UConn in person. I need to see what it's actually like for them to run their offense, right here in this dome. And lo and behold, he did, and narrowly got the best of you. But to your point of what you just said, the UConn fans that are really dialed in are very aware of this, but a lot of stuff that Dan has been running, it intrigues and vexes and sometimes maddens some of the opponents that you have to face. And I'm sure that's a real point of pride for you, Dan.
Yeah, well, I think it's a fun way to play. I think, I do think when you don't play against a lot of teams that play like that, and then you have to play against that, in the NCAA tournament, especially on a short prep, you get a 1-day prep, you play Thursday, Saturday, and you're not guarding a lot of, flares, screen to screener to jet twirls and, gut zooms. And then it's high, low, top down post ups. And it's, just attacking a defense with a lot more, like off ball and cutting, and it's a lot to, I think, to deal with in terms of the prep for that tournament. And then I think it keeps our group offensively engaged. I think, when a lot of different people are touching the ball in an offensive possession, I think it's a fun way to play offense. And and I think we did a lot of those things actually prior to 23. I think where we've gotten a lot better is with constructing the roster, guys that could shoot, pass, read the game, and play in a complicated system of offense, where they've got to learn a vernacular, like a vocabulary of offensive and defensive basketball. That is like it's like a third language for some of them. They may know English, French, and then UConn basketball language is like a third language.
also helps them prep for the NBA level, no question about it. Let's get to the schedule. Non-con, not afraid. You can tell what a coach thinks about his team often by the way he schedules in the non-conference. Big East, obviously double round robin. We're going to 32 regular season games this upcoming season. That means 12 opportunities in the non-con. And Hurley took advantage with 7 notable games. This is probably going to be as strong as any non-conference schedule that's out there. Versus Michigan on November 6th. Yes, folks, that is a national title game rematch. I did a story on this early in this offseason. There's only been a handful of instances where the two teams that met for the championship went on to meet again the following season. And I think this is only the first or second time, Dan, I want to say in like 30 years that it actually is in the first week. So awesome job by you and Michigan to get that done. Then they're home against Ohio State on November 13th at Zona, the return game. Arizona and UConn played a great one in stores last year. That'll be on November 18th. And then against Duke in Vegas on November 25th. That's the day before Thanksgiving, if I recall correctly. I believe I'll be out there to catch that one in person. You play Illinois on December 4th. And then you've got Kansas on December 12, and then Virginia in New York City on December 20. So if you are keeping track at home, that is UConn playing all three other teams that made the Final Four last season. And that's before you get into Blue Blood Kansas, which may well have, you know, the best player in the sport this season. We'll see if Tyron Stokes hits it off in a major way. Ohio State, which will be super talented, could be a top 25 level kind of team. Virginia, I think as a case, is top 10. Tell me a little bit how unafraid you were when it came to building the schedule and the intent that you wanted. Obviously, quite clearly, you wanted to send a message with 7 notable high major teams. Although I will tag, last year during the season, Dan said, I may go 8 next year. I caught him after one of these games. He did stop just short of that, and you told me earlier this offseason, it's because you truly think that the Big East is going to take a jump up collectively this year, and you were okay sacrificing an 8th notable non-con game with the idea that the Big East collectively will rise a little bit.
Black Friday is the day after?
What's yes. Day? Yes.
That's a big shopping day.
Huge shopping day, yeah.
And when do we play Duke? It's on Thanksgiving.
I want to say it's Wednesday. I feel like that game against Duke is the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. I don't think that's Black Friday, but I could be wrong.
That's good, because I don't want my wife in Vegas anywhere near Black Friday. They got like good shopping.
I'm sure it's incredible.
Yeah, they got good shopping. So. Yeah.
No, I hear you.
I actually, the scheduling thing really for me was like, you don't know what the league's going to look like. You know, like you don't know what that, I mean, we've obviously, I think we're coming off of a year or two where, you know, we haven't had probably the volume of Quad 1, Quad 2 games in Big East Conference play, right? So that, I think, you know, it was a reason why we've been a little bit more, you know, we've been more aggressive with the non-conference schedule, although I do believe this year it's going to be a much stronger league. I think the new hires and the commitments that programs have made are going to make the conference, you know, play a lot more difficult. And, you know, so that's part of it. I mean, the other part of it, too, is it's dollars and cents, really. I mean, it costs you money to pay a low major or a mid-major to come and play you at home, right? It costs you money to pay them to come play you, whereas when you play, you know, one of these big non-conference games, you make money. Mm-hmm. And now that we're paying the players, now that we're in rev share, you know, it makes sense, you know, for us as coaches to play games that are going to not cost your school money, but make money for your school so that the coaches and the players, you know, or you're bringing in revenue, not taking money away from the school. So I don't, you know, like, you don't get penalized for losing games like the ones that we're going to embark on in a non-conference. You know, like you don't have to win every one of them. You just got to win your fair share of them. Mm-hmm. If you do that, you put yourself in great position, not only getting in the tournament, but from a seeding standpoint. So you obviously got to believe in your team, but you know, I hate coaching bye games. I feel worse the day I wake up to play those. Because you know, you're worried about motivating your team and are these guys going to be sleepwalking? Are the fans at home going to be brutal and disinterested? You know, I'll take those 7 games over the bye games any day.
I remember going to your practice the day before you played East Texas A&M. This was in advance of the, sorry for invoking it, this was before the Maui trip. it was like a 2 hour, 15 minute practice against a team that was like one of the 25 worst teams in the country.
You were genuinely treating
it as though you were facing a top 25 opponent.
And
it was wild to witness.
And I think like Caravan like tipped in a missed layup at the buzzer for us to go up 12 at halftime. I mean, it was as miserable as advertised, that experience. I love these big games, and it gives you, I mean, it identifies for you just like the three exhibitions. I mean, to play Syracuse, at Mohegan will be pretty cool, to go to Michigan State and play that exhibition. And then again, Purdue, to play those guys in an exhibition, we're going to have a really good sense of where we need to get better, way before we get to Boston and have to play the defending champs.
Good stuff. All right, lightning round to wrap. So these are all off the top of Dan's head. I did send him a text yesterday to be like, hey, look, these three or four, like it might take you a minute to think of it. So I'm sending him you in advance and so you can know. And to my non-shock, he did not, not only did he not respond, he didn't even see the text. How many unread texts we got on the phone right now? How many? I'm going to say mid-July. I'm going to be optimistic. I'm going to say you're at like 73 unreads.
No, 1,234.
Oh, my God.
And 36,577 emails.
You're a man.
I'm present. I feel like if there's something like that, I just don't like, I want to be away from my phone. I want to be present. I want to be with the people that I'm around. So when I'm in here, I'm completely present with my staff, my players. When I'm home, I'm completely present with my wife, my kids. When I'm out to dinner with somebody, I'm completely present with them. I'll make a phone call, and I'm big on voice memos.
Oh, you and Scott Drew, the two kings. Scott Drew's been doing it for, I'm not exaggerating, at least 6 years. Yeah, he's way ahead of you. But you've joined the fray. And I do appreciate that because if I send you something, you see it, you hit me back, and I can get like 39 seconds of your thoughts. I'd almost rather prefer that than just the text. So
I don't like the text. I hate text messaging. I know
1,234 unreads though. It's not even that you didn't respond. They are unread.
Some of them are my spam.
Yeah, I hear you. I feel like you've been present for the majority of this, right? You might have checked out mentally once or twice, but I can accept that.
Well, I could see Colvin Landry's walking across the bridge right now, going into study hall. He does have he's got his head down a little bit. It's probably not his favorite stop on the day.
By the way, before we get rolling the lightning round, I rocked the Pearl Jam shirt just for you because you told me this was your favorite band once upon a time.
Yes, so. That was a great time for music.
There we go. All right, here we go. You ready?
Sure.
All right, what was your best subject in high school?
History.
I thought that's what it was. 95 degrees or 25 degrees, what would you rather stand outside in?
95 degrees.
What's the funniest thing you heard a fan yell at you? See, this was one of the texts I sent him so he could think about it and have an answer ready.
I'll beat your ass. I'll beat you, Hurley. I'll beat your ass. And then it was like an old guy.
And then what happened?
Two rings, Baldy.
That's what happened. What is your most irrational fear?
Germs.
I mean, that's semi-rational, but sure.
Somebody has a cold or a cough. Yeah. As soon as I hear somebody cough, I assume
it's over. Okay. How fast do you think you can run a mile right now?
6:50.
Will you run one in the next week and send me how long it took you or no?
No.
Okay. What's the thing you do or the habit that you have that annoys your wife the most, but you cannot get rid of it? She's always, lamenting to you, bitching to you about it, and you just can't eliminate it from your life.
The food, the foods are great. Like grapefruit and blueberry, like the fact that I eat the same thing breakfast and lunch every single day. And because I demand grapefruit, she has to slice up the grapefruit.
You can't slice it yourself.
Well, she's just trying to get me out of the house. I mean, it gets me away from her and out of the house faster if she just does it and just hands me my lunchbox and sends me in.
Is it actually a lunchbox?
Yeah.
Is it a lunchbox the way people are hear the word lunchbox and think lunchbox, or is it just like a little black freezer bag that works as lunchbox?
No, it's not like one of those old metal lunchboxes.
I wish it was though.
I wish it was too, but it's not. I'm a bigger man than a kid. Those are small enough because it's a child that's eating the food. I need more sustenance. I'm a grown man.
And if it was a lunchbox like that, we already know what would be on the lunchbox. It's over your right shoulder. It'd be Batman.
Yeah.
Be Batman. What's in the lunchbox?
What is in my lunchbox?
Yeah, you said it's the same food every day. What's in the lunchbox?
Grapefruit and blueberries in the morning, and then a salad for lunch, beets, avocado, walnuts, tomatoes, peppers, and then maybe it might be arugula, spinach, baby spinach. Mix up that part of it.
Every day, though.
Every day, it's just for me. It keeps this machine, like from a digestive standpoint. I think it keeps you functioning on a schedule.
Okay, like to hear it. What's the most recent song you listened to, start to finish?
Most recently, I'd probably say "Dream On" from Aerosmith. While I was working out this morning, it was our team song at the Final Four in 23 when we won it the first time.
Like to hear it. Okay, your wife's out of town. You're home alone. I tell you, you can eat anything for dinner. You're breaking up your damn routine. You can do it without judgment, but it's on you to cook. You're the mayor. It's all on you. What are you eating?
I have to cook it, or I can order.
You have to do it yourself. No, you got to prepare it. What are you doing?
Probably chili, like a filet mignon chili. Okay.
Is that going to work out well for you?
I can make chili. I'm actually, I'll slice up the peppers, the onions, a little bit of slice. I'll do it with like a nice steak though, like steak chunks, with the, with a couple of different types of beans, okay. Some fresh tomatoes.
That's relatively responsible. I was almost wondering if you were going to say like peanut butter and jelly, and then I'll top it off with some frosted flakes.
No, like they got in the food store here, they got like a really good frozen pizza though. It's like above Ilio's. It's like there's a really good frozen pizza. I don't know.
A high bar to clear. Do we know the brand? Do we want to give a shout out?
I can't.
It's like, remember. It's this California pizza something. I can't remember.
Cape Cod. All right, never mind.
Okay, that's so gross. Who's the most influential coach on you that people might not realize? This can be basketball, it can be any kind of coach, but someone that maybe you haven't talked about a ton that has had influence on you one way or another.
I would probably be two, because I probably don't talk about them enough. I mean, Coach Izzo and my dad, and like I got some great mentors. I would probably say Fran Fraschella, Seth Greenberg, like those two guys. I think I've lit their phones up a lot. They've been great mentors, for me. Obviously, they've transitioned to TV, but I mean, they've been accessible, and their knowledge is off the charts.
On a per month basis, how often do you think about what your life would be like if you had said yes to the Lakers? How many times a month do you think about that?
Maybe once every 3 months.
Okay. Would you rather perform a love scene on camera with an actress, or be forced to coach an entire game by being strapped down, literally strapped down to your seat, not able to stand up for an entire game?
I mean, I could do a love scene with Andrea, my wife.
No, it's with an actress. That's the whole point. You're in some sort of movie. You got to do a love scene with an actress. With your wife would not be difficult. This is why it's that question.
You're going to have to strap me down to the seat. I think I could do it. I mean,
I don't know if you could. 40 minutes, Dan. You cannot stand up once the entire game.
And it's like, it's tight.
Yes,
like,
yes. Physically restrained.
And you're wheeling me in and off the court? Or
correct.
I walk to the seat.
No, it's a wheel situation.
My marriage is important, so.
I know you're acting in the other scenario, but there we go. You heard it. Who's the one person you've met since winning the national title who actually made you nervous? because you would have met someone when you were 19, 23, 27. That's understandable. Since you reached the level that you've reached in the past 3-4 years, someone that you met that you were nervous to meet.
Yeah, I mean, I met a couple of presidents. You know, I met, you know, Bill Clinton, Biden, President Trump. I've met those presidents. That was like, what the, you know? And when I met Clinton, it was the year that President Clinton, it was the year that we beat Arkansas in the Sweet 16. And he called me across a room. He had all the Secret Service around him. He's like, you beat my hogs. And I was like, wow, this is the press. So, meeting the presidents to me is nerve wracking because, like, look at the decisions that they make and the what's on their daily schedule. It's not shell defense. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, yo, president.
That's true. Are you familiar with what's going on in the Strait of Hormuz, out of curiosity?
No.
Okay. Topic on the pod. We'll keep it moving. Back when you had to sit coach on an airplane, would you recline the seat back or would you respect the person behind you and not recline? Please be honest.
It depends on what the person in front of me was doing.
And then
I would also, the size of the person that I would be, you know, if it was a larger person, taller person, I wouldn't impose. And then also, what is the person doing to me in front of me? You know, am I just trying to create more space?
Yeah.
Or are you doing the calculus on that?
It's big time calculus. Last time you sat coach, by the way, when was that, you think? What year?
Last summer. I was in, I took a connect. I was overseas.
Okay, there we go. Where on this planet have you yet to visit that you most want to go to?
I want to go to Japan.
Me too, real bad. I was talking about that with my wife recently. She's got no desire to fly over the Pacific. I really want to go to Japan.
Yeah, my wife doesn't want to go there either. I want to go to Japan. I want to see what they've got going on over there. I've got...
I think they got some stuff going on over there, yeah.
A lot of respect for their culture, obviously the food.
Great skiing over there, by the way. All right, I mean, let's give it till 2030. If we can't convince our wives to go, we'll make a buddy trip out of it. I've always wondered this. So many timeouts during the game. So many of them, right? How do you, and I understand sometimes like late game situation, it's going to be intense, but how do you keep from making it repetitive at the under 16, at the under 12? There's this weird break where you get one play and you're right back in. Like, how do you prevent like the players from checking out? Because there's too many timeouts in college basketball.
Well, I think, you know, number one, you have to know how to get someone's attention. You know, and some of it is, you know, it's performance. You know, you're trying to jolt the group with enthusiasm and energy as they come into the huddle. You know, and then there's either tons of corrections to make about what's transpired since you saw them last, as well as, you know, how we need to move forward. You know, and then what we're going to execute coming out of the timeout, both on offense and defense. And then, you know, you always got like changes in matchups, like, you know, what we need to do in terms of like getting players off of other players, just changing matchups. The NCAA tournament timeouts those are more of a challenge because obviously the timeouts are significantly longer, but regular season timeouts don't feel like that.
Okay. Two more. One, what's your best superstition? You've got like 19 of them. What's the best one?
Probably the underwear.
Are you sure?
Just the underwear. I mean, just the way that I'm able to kind of rotate the underwear, because it's also like game day shoot around underwear that have been winning. Day before a game, traveling on the road, underwear that... So it really becomes outfits. If you actually see me during the year, I'll be wearing the same outfit day before a game with media. And if we're winning for, you know, say we win for a month straight, you'll see me in that same outfit prior to every media engagement that I have, because I'm going to wear the same clothes 2 days out, 1 day out. I'm going to sleep in the same shorts and t-shirt. I'm going to wear the same sock. So I would say clothes in general, but I would say if you made me drill down to just the underwear, I have fun with the underwear. I'm actually thinking about adding a fourth pair of underwear to the rotation.
Please do.
I just got a pair of tiger underwear from MeUndies, like a to add to the sharks, wolves, dragons.
Tigers. Sharks, wolves, dragons, tigers. Okay. This underwear you're referring to, like you're still wearing the same underwear that you wore in 23. Same pair.
It's the same pair. So like I'm not wearing them this summer. Like they're resting.
Got it. Okay.
The wolves, the sharks, and the dragons, like they're unworn. So they get a lot of activity during the winter, but they get the summers off, spring and fall off.
Makes sense.
Unless you got a big recruit. If I got a big recruit here.
You toss on the dragons, of course.
I'll throw the dragons on if we got a big recruit, and then I'll like kind of show them, you know, not obviously I'm just like a little titch. Hey, listen, this tells you what you mean to us. I got on the dragon.
You're showing recruits your underwear. That's what you're saying.
But just to them, it's I think it's important for the parents to know how
I think that's normal. Yeah.
How important a recruit is.
I think that's completely rational. We both live in Connecticut. What's the best restaurant in this nutmeg state?
Listen, we spent a lot of time at the Capitol Grill. You never have a bad meal at the Capitol Grill. I mean, you want to get a nice steak, just nice, just a classy meal. I mean, at the Capitol Grill, I got my place, Sayulita, that I like in Glastonbury. I love Mexican food, so that's a great spot. Italian, you got Brico's, the Brico spots are excellent, so I also I get like the short rib quesadilla and like a honey hot chicken sandwich.
Yeah.
You've got Birch Hill Tavern, and then Beam House has got it's like a great Big Mac. It's like having a Big Mac, but only it's made like a top quality Big Mac. It's like Beam House burger.
Gotcha. Puerto Vallarta. They got one in Newington. They got one down around my parts. Amazing. All right. Mexican. If you want to make it happen.
Puerto Vallarta.
Yeah. All right. It's good stuff. That's a show. My, oh my, we went 55. Look at you. Present for 55 minutes. They were like, listen, for this year's shoot arounds, try and keep them 30-ish minutes. I was like, no problem at all. first one. Long show, but we were over
here.
No, it's on me. I had the questions. We could have been out of here 15 minutes ago if it wasn't for my rapid fire insistence, but I think we learned a lot. I think the audience is going to really appreciate getting to know an even more intimate side of Dan Hurley. The underwear stuff just incredible. Have a wonderful rest of your summer. I'll try and get up there in the preseason and check out this mural that hopefully won't be on its third or fourth makeover by that point.
This is it.
Hopefully this gets it done. I appreciate you. Good luck, and we'll link up as we get closer, Dan, and enjoy the rest of your Connecticut summer, bud.
All right, Matt. Appreciate you, brother.
No problem. All right, that goes it for episode one of the Summer Shoot Around. We will be back next week. Three episodes locked and loaded. GP is on vacation. I'm going on vacation soon, so there may or may not be a pre-tape, including one with another coach of a preseason top 10 team. You'll have to follow the feed. We'll talk to you then.
Podcasts.